What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hey everybody, Ethan here. Today we're talking about the movie Good Boys and all things puberty and our bodies and how they change and evolve and grow. And so if you're going through puberty right now, then that's great. What a perfect time for you to discover the podcast. And if not, if you're older than that and that's already happened to you, then maybe when you have kids, this will help you talk to them and communicate with your kids. Or you can just let them figure it out on their own. You can just let them type in changing penis into the internet. That shouldn't be so bad, right? Let me see. Changing penis. Okay. Honestly, I wanted to do it for a joke, and now I regret that I did it. This was a mistake. Enjoy the podcast. I'm going to go take a nap, and hopefully by the time I wake up, I forget about this.
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Bad Science. I'm Ethan Edinburgh, your host. This is the podcast where we discuss the scientific inaccuracies of a film with a scientist and a comedian. And today, we are talking about a very funny and very recent film called Good Boys, which came out last year in 2019 and was the first rated R movie ever with the description, strong, crude sexual content, drug and alcohol material, and language all involving tweens, which I thought was kind of unique and cool. Today, we have two fantastic guests. First, she is a pediatrician and host of the upcoming podcast, That's Totally Normal, Dr. Tessa Commers.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I noticed from your YouTube page, you might prefer to be called Dr. T. Would you like me to call you Dr. T today?
That sounds lovely. Sure. Thank you.
It's really cool. It reminds me of like Mr. T. It's like a very badass moniker.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what I was going for. It's what my cousin calls me. And I just kind of went with it.
Great. Okay. Well, I have so many questions for you, which will probably make me somewhat uncomfortable, but I guess it's kind of your sweet spot. And joining us is the Associate Director of Strategic Projects at Advocates for Youth, Lincoln Mondi.
Hi, it's Monday, like how older people say the day of the week. So it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It's always great explaining, but it's so great to be on. Thanks, Ethan.
Absolutely. Sorry for my mispronunciation, Lincoln Mondi. So before we get started into it, I had a few things I wanted to bring up. First of all, I watched your short film, which I know you released a few years ago, and it's called Black Lives, Black Lungs. And
I was like, a short film,
I know it's a few years ago, but I saw it on the site, and whenever somebody has a short film, I have to watch it. There's no excuse not to. They're short. So I just loved it. I thought it was so great, and I just wanted to ask if there's like any updates with it, because in the film, the most staggering thing to me was that tobacco-related diseases are the leading cause of death for African Americans. I did not know that.
Yeah, above all else. And really, the film shows that it was all strategic. So specifically with menthol tobacco products, it was marketed and integrated into our community. So now we're at the point where 7 out of 10 Black smokers smoke menthol, where the number for white smokers is 2 out of 10. And menthol is actually more pervasive because it masks the harshness of tobacco, but it's so ingrained in our culture. So I explored why. And I would say the update is definitely that the tobacco industry is using new tactics. So they have vaping companies now, and they don't say that they're big tobacco, but with the board and the CEO of Juul being from big tobacco, and with Altria having a stake in big tobacco, obviously they are big tobacco. So I'm working with organizations who are focused on making sure that big tobacco's practices that I documented in my documentary years ago, decades ago, whether it was ethnic field trips into Black neighborhoods and then projecting their culture back into them with smoking advertisements, is not doubled down and redone with the vaping epidemic. So that's kind of where I started really thinking about health, specifically the health of my community. And that's where I really focus on kind of the whole body, whether it's sexual health, mental health, or in this case, when it comes to tobacco prevention.
Wow. So they have shapeshifted. They have evolved into this.
All the shapeshifters, yes. And very, very strategically. So they, of course, can't be regulated. Vaping companies can't be regulated like big tobacco companies are, because they're not the same, even though they are. So they've been very successful in making politicians and the public think of them as two different products so that they're not regulated in the same way, because we have gone a long way in terms of going from officials lying in front of Congress saying that cigarettes are not harmful to actual prevention methods in place in localities. But yeah, it's kind of the same old, same old. They're dusting off their practices and using again with a new audience, a new generation, and new technology.
Man, so terrible. Is that because the regulations on vaping specifically, is that because it's just a new sort of product? And so it just takes time to, I don't know, get studies done and then get the word out there that this is, like, I don't know, maybe not just as bad,
exactly,
but still terrible for you?
Exactly. Basically, the rate of usage skyrocketed, and the studies and the academic research and scientific research is not keeping up with it. Whereas with cigarettes, we have like 60 years of research and science that shows the big tobacco specifically, like, targeted my community with menthol products, and that we die disproportionately because menthol masks the harshness. So it's actually easier to pick up menthol cigarettes and harder to put down because you don't have the harshness. But yeah, it's a weird world. People are like, you're talking about this, then you're talking about sex. But really, I'm just focused on institutions not kind of having power over my people, specifically queer community, the Black community, and my favorites, the Black queer community. So I'm really kind of making sure through kind of all of public health that we really intentionally include everyone in the process, especially when we have campaigns that are addressing it.
Wow. Okay. Amazing. I think that segues really great into this film, which is about kids coming of age, going through puberty. And Dr. T, I think this would be totally up your alley, because I was watching some of your YouTube videos, and then I was watching some of the Amaze animated video series that are all about sex and relationships and growing up and stuff like that. So what did you guys think of the film? When was the first time you saw it? We'll start with Dr. T.
I thought it was hilarious. The first time I saw it, I made my husband watch it with me over the weekend, actually. And we both are pediatricians, and we both found it to be obviously written by a more adult group of people, but a lot of it was pretty darn accurate as far as sort of the mindset of 12-year-olds and the physicality, the differences, the awkwardness. You know, I actually looked up how old the actors were, and they were all, you know, 11, 12, and 13. So it really does speak to the changes that they're going through physically, you know, from the voices cracking to experimenting with some sexual things and understanding what a tampon is. We found it to be hilarious and remarkably accurate for an otherwise pretty raunchy premise, but it was pretty darn funny.
Yeah, I agree with that. I gotta say, I think the cracking, or pretty much anytime somebody would like yell in that like super high pitch, like that was some of my favorite parts of the movies. I just could not get enough of kids yelling. But anyways, Lincoln, what about you? What'd you think of the film?
I cackled throughout. It was hilarious. I've been trying to get my boyfriend and my best friend to watch it with me for like a month as we've been like doom scrolling on the streaming sites. And they've always said no when we watch a trailer. And I'm like, okay, fine, I'll watch it by myself. And then I did because of this, because I got to speak to Dr. T about it. So that's awesome. but I watched it a couple times. It was really, really funny. I also think it's just like, I think there's a couple of things like, wow, first of all, everyone has their ears pierced. I'm like, that's new for me.
Yeah.
And then that's new for me in middle school. Also, it's kind of nice to see that things are still around, even though, you know, like, wow, because the insult of being random was around when I was in middle school. I was like, they're still calling people random. And even though it's such like a vague insult, it sticks, you know? And it's like, wow, it's still going on, still happening. I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. Obviously, whenever we talk about anything, I'm sure Dr. T, you get into this when it comes to like adult entertainment. Like, obviously, it's adult entertainment. This is not for children, and it's not for kids. Obviously, it depicts children, but definitely adult entertainment. But I thought it was hilarious. It did give me super bad vibes. And when I looked, did some further research, and found it was from Seth Rogen and his co-producer, I was like, that makes sense. That tracks.
Yeah, totally. I think Superbad is probably a classic movie about young kids. I will say it's probably the best, one of the best ones, in my opinion. But this was up there. I was very surprised as well of how entertaining it was, how funny it was. And okay, so jumping in here, I'm going to try and go chronologically, but I'm sure we're going to jump all over the place. So right at the beginning, Max's dad, who's played by Will Forte, who is also just unbelievably hilarious in this movie. So good. Always been a fan of his, but man, I didn't know he was in this. I didn't know Sam Richardson was in this, and I'm just huge fans of the two of them. But anyway, so he comes in and basically catches Max masturbating, or like not currently masturbating, but like, you know, it seems like that's what was going to happen. He catches on to it and just becomes so proud of him instantaneously for being at that point in his life. So I wanted to just start there as far as what is, you know, an appropriate place to start. When is it, you know, what is too much? I found that to be a common question online that people had. And should parents have, like, similar to the famous sex talk, is there a masturbation talk that should happen, or are kids just, you know, supposed to figure it out?
I just have to say, I wrote down the quote, "You just got the best toy in the world, and now you want to play with it," as far as discovering sort of sexual attraction. I mean, masturbation is, so in this age range, we call it more early adolescence, so the tween years, and it's definitely a part of that shift in growing up. And it's not necessarily that something always that is always on their minds, but that sexual attraction and understanding your own reproductive organs and sexual health is, again, it's very accurate for this age group. And it's going to be up to parents whether they, you know, want to have that talk or not. I remember when I was growing up, there was an episode of Roseanne where her son was, they made a joke about him upstairs, you know, masturbating. And I remember asking my mom what it was, and she said, "You're not watching Roseanne ever again." So I do think
that was the end of Roseanne for you.
Yes, it was the end. But I do think every parent has, you know, a different approach to it. And sometimes, I mean, obviously it's going to be awkward for, you saw Max in the movie just rolling his eyes. But if you're up for talking about it, I think that's wonderful. I also think that if you're uncomfortable talking about it, that's okay too. But just to let your kid know that there's nothing wrong with them is ultimately, I think, the most important. You don't have to be as cool as that dad. But I do think, you know, having a respect for your kid and acknowledging the humanness of sexuality is really important.
Yeah, I agree. I think this dad is just such the like antithetical like parent trope, where it's like it's either the very, very protective, don't talk about anything parent, or it's at the opposite end where it's like oversharing and viewed as that. But I mean, I agree with Dr. T, but I also think, like, you know, throughout, it's just at the end of the day, all of these stuff comes down to, like, am I normal, right? Like, at this age, the young people are going through, they're starting to realize that not everything evolves around them, that there was time before they were born on this earth, and that, like, you know, what are we doing here on this earth? What is the higher being? What is this? They're always just asking questions and really coming into their own and realizing that, A, everything isn't about them, and also that they need to figure out their place in the world. And I think that comes down with exploration, right? Like, masturbation is normal. I think that as a society, we, like, talk about it in such hushed tones and whispers that it gives this very shamey and, like, stigma-based kind of view for kids. And so if the dad was so, like, it came in, it was just absolutely disgusted and just, like, you can't talk about this, you can't do this, that is what a lot of young people experience. And that's not great, because then you're not an askable parent. Mm-hmm. And we really, from Amaze, our audience is 10 to 14 year olds. That's what our videos are geared towards. And they need to understand that exploration is normal, that they're not weird, that this isn't something that's just special to them, that also they need to be kind of guided a bit, because obviously we have the go-to trope where it's like kids are playing doctor. And that's what happens. Like, you need to have the conversations about sex, like, pleasure, and, like, when that's appropriate, right? if you don't have the conversation, kids can have the wrong idea in terms of like when they should do that in different settings or in play dates and things like that. But if you have an actual honest conversation with them and let them know that, yes, it's normal and that you're exploring your body and this is what it is, this is what's happening, if they're comfortable, but also just like giving them some practical guidance, right? So that they're not doing this exploration outside of their private boundaries or private areas or their rooms. So I love how the dad approached it. Obviously, is a very cringy to the kid. But at the end of the day, I think it's better because, again, he's being an asshole parent. At least the kid knows that they can go to him if he has questions about it in the future.
Well, and Lincoln, do you guys talk about porn?
Oh, all the time. every day.
Yeah, like it represents, it's so pervasive. And that's how a lot of kids find out. I mean, these kids are Googling how to kiss and it brings up, oh, this stepmom. It's disgusting. But the porn and the way that sex is portrayed is also unhealthy, I think, in many ways, in many avenues. And so I think also having that discussion of what is reality and what is not is also a part of fantasizing or you know, the
correct. Yeah, like we really talk about porn in the sense of like the superhero movies, right? Like obviously when you're watching Batman, that's you know, fictionalized. It's not an accurate representation of that experience. And with porn, specifically when we're talking about pleasure and things like that, obviously, and again, adult entertainment, right? It's porn is meant for adult entertainment. And a lot of even the adult film stars that we work with, they don't want to be talking to your kid about sex. They're not experts on sexuality and sex education. And that really is the parent and trusted adult's role. And so if kids' first response is to go to porn for their everything they need to know about their bodies and lives and health and love, obviously that they're getting a distorted vision of what that is. And that can come with a lot of problems in terms of relationships and boundaries in the long term. So the thing is, it's like, it's making sure that they have a parent that they can talk to with that, right? And I don't want to get too far into it, but like, that's the whole plot of this movie, right? Like the whole plot is basically on the premise that this group of friends, they just want to know how to kiss. They just wanted to know how to kiss before they went to the kissing party. Mm-hmm. All they wanted to know was know how to kiss and what happened, right? Like they went to misinformation online. They went to spying on their neighbors and they didn't go ask an adult or ask a guardian or someone in a relationship with them to be like, you can ask me these questions because it's messy and growing up is awkward and uncomfortable, but you can ask me. But instead they went to misinformation online, porn, and then we see where that ended up. So that's really kind of how we talk about porn, is that it shouldn't be educating your child, and porn is out there, it will never go away. And we're in no way villainizing or in the frame of villainizing porn, because again, it's for adult entertainment. But at the same time, it's like you have to have other outlets to educate your kids so they're not getting everything they need to learn from porn.
I love that.
Yeah, very awesome. Well stated.
Our video on porn has a good melody to it, and it's in the superhero trait and the cheeky Amaze brand. The superhero's attachment is elongated and used as a rope to show how extraordinary and how distorted. Outrageous and distorted all of these representations are.
Wow. I got to check that out. Educate myself.
You didn't find that video first?
I did. Before that?
That's like,
I didn't.
You know, you probably found the boner song first.
Yeah, I think I did. And I saw, well, let's not get into what my particular my interests were, but I wanted to highlight one of the things you said, because I thought it was so great. One of the like best messages I felt in the movie, and just when I was like looking up some of these resources that both of you guys provide, and that I think kids just now have online, which maybe my generation did not, is that normal is whatever you are, that there's something to be ashamed of or something that, you know, you have to fit into. Because I think that's kind of, and I mean, adults are guilty of the same thing, right? Like if you have some ailment or, you know, you think you go to WebMD and you're like, is this normal? What am I feeling right now? Is that normal? And of course you assume it's not because you read God knows what horrific shit on WebMD. But as kids with this, with puberty stuff, I think it's so great to kind of just reinforce that you don't have to fit some sort of mold, that now it's seemingly, at least I hope, getting to more of a place where they can feel comfortable in their own skin almost no matter what is going on with them.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that the ultimate goal? It's still the more social media and, you know, the internet is a part of our lives, the more you are able to reach out and see that there are others who are going through this with you, but they're still just intrinsic to that age group, that self-doubt and that awkwardness, and your body itself is kind of turning on you, and you know, right. You get erections randomly, or you know, like your period starts in the middle of class. You know, there are all sorts of ways that it kind of lets you down and you feel awkward about things. And so definitely just normalizing it to the best extent that we can is a really my way of approaching it, obviously. Yeah. But there's still, you know, there's still some awkward things to be worked out.
Oh, for sure. And I just want to say so just at the beginning of this movie, I love that was like the opening because it really sets the tone. But I will also just say in terms of like the reach that we have to go, like the work that still needs to be done, is that how many storylines like this have we seen in movies that like include boys or men masturbating or talking about like pleasure, and it's like very funny and it's like part of the script, but like we would never do that with girls or women because of how we stigmatize like female pleasure. And even in sex education and abstinence only curriculum, everything's focused on like the male's pleasure, right? And I just think that is like, you know, like of course it's great that it's in this movie, but I don't think they would ever do it to where it was a girl in that instance. Because of how we approach female sexuality, and that's even off the table. Like we can talk about funny boner songs or funny erection jokes, but like we can never talk about female pleasure.
That is so interesting though. Do you think there's a way that it could be done? Like there are a lot of female comedians that are, you know, but to,
and should be done,
to joke about. Yeah. I think that's a fantastic idea.
Yeah. I was thinking about that a little bit during the movie, just because you were comparing it to Superbad and I felt kind of the same thing. Not to trash the movie at all, I really enjoyed the film, but just that, oh, we've kind of seen this type of thing several times before. And I was just thinking like, oh, I wonder from, you know, if it was just switched and we had, you know, just the female perspective, would it all, you know, be just as funny and all work the same? And like, of course it would. And probably be that much more unique and kind of interesting and cool. So maybe there is a movie like that already, and I don't know. It's not coming to mind.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's like instances. I'm pretty sure maybe Booksmart, which kind of in my mind is like in this coming of age, you know, awkward, messy. I think there was some storylines around like female pleasure. But yeah, it's definitely not the same how we lift up like male pleasure in terms of like comedic lines and things like that. And I think that's just something that we see all the time in sex education, because at Amaze and at Advocates for Youth, which is the organization behind Amaze, we focus on getting accurate, inclusive sex education in schools across the country with our sex ed curriculum. And a lot of what we're trying to undo is this whole thing where, you know, in abstinence only messaging, where it's like, you know, here's a piece of gum to girls in the classroom, chew that gum, take the piece of gum out, try to give that gum to the partner next to you. Like, that's your virginity, right? Like, if you, quote, give up your virginity, which virginity is fake, if you give up your virginity, that's like you're a chewed piece of gum. And like, what male suitor would want that in the future? And I grew up in Texas, in the rural area, where our sex ed standards haven't been updated since I was born in 1994. So it's really, really a lot of undoing this like view that sexuality and that all these relationships is tied in terms of like what the male gaze is.
Wow.
That's a horrible exercise.
Oh, right. Oh, yes. There's so many of them. There's the fishbowl one. There's the chewed gum one.
Hold on a second. Let's go through this. Did you say fish bone? What was that?
Fishbowl.
Fishbowl. So what's that?
So it's like in one of the exercises, like an abstinence only instructor will like pass a fishbowl around, and like people will like either put tape on themselves and then put the tape in the fishbowl. And at the end, it's like, look, all this tape is like not able to stick anymore, right? Like all this tape is like used, kind of like the gun, to where if you, quote unquote, provide your body in multiple sexual encounters, as you grow up, you'll be like unworthy or unused, as if you were a new piece of gum or a new piece of tape that you put in the fishbowl that wasn't dirtied.
Man, that is...
It's absolutely outrageous.
That's weird on several levels. Like the gum thing is obviously stupid, but it's pretty common to chew gum. Who puts tape in fishbowls? That's outrageous. It's
a dumb idea anyway.
Yeah.
but that is interesting, because that, again, is very much more geared toward the female. and, yeah. And heterosexual relationships and the concept of virginity. And once you're broken, then that's it. And there's no going back. But there are so many misconceptions about putting things in the vagina. And does that, that take away my, you know, arbitrary virginity? And, there's so much education that still needs to be done and so much more normalizing a lot of the normal processes of our the female anatomy, at least. But but that's it's a very much a female exercise, I think, is once you're used, then no one wants you. How shameful. Yeah. That's
exactly.
We got to come up with some sort of comparable exercises here. Something that's fun that also involves fun, you know, fish bowls and gum, but teaches the right thing.
Yeah.
Where everybody just has pizza for some reason. I don't know. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The break is over. Here we go back to the show about science.
Okay. So listen, obviously we're going to get back to all this fun stuff about periods and boners and, you know, we all love it. But let's switch gears to kids with substances. There's several scenes where they're drinking beer or getting Molly, trying to buy Molly. I was just basically going to ask if you guys had experiences with beer at a young age or Molly in general, just because I feel like nobody, like people don't really know things about Molly. I had MDMA one time. I don't even know much about it. I think I was fine. I was kind of in a giddy mood for a little while, but I never drank beer as a kid. Is that the more common? Are people doing that? I know weed is like legal in a ton of places now. So is that some sort of issue? Do you guys advise, you know, kids to roll up blunts or what?
Sure. No. I mean, you know, from a personal perspective, I didn't really start drinking till I was more in college, but it was definitely, I mean, that whole take one sip, oh, the record is three sips of beer. Yeah. Hilarious. But there is always that intrigue and that experimentation aspect of, you know, wanting to try these more adult things. But from, you know, I live in Washington State. And a lot of states are also legalizing marijuana. And I have never, you know, rolled a joint for a child. And I wouldn't advise that. But what we are starting to understand, it's kind of like the vaping, is a lot of this is new. And there's also, it's frowned upon to do studies on, not frowned upon, but it's not as accepted to study growing and developing bodies so much as more adult bodies. So that's why, you know, a lot of our drugs are approved more for adults, or they're approved faster for adults than they are for kids. There are a lot more studies that are done on adults than there are for kids, because you don't really want to experiment and mess with a child. But what we do know is some what we call retrospective studies and analysis of kids that start using drugs when they're marijuana when they're younger. And then once they're older, we're able to ask them about those habits. And it's still kind of a cloudy subject. I know we're not really talking about marijuana here when we're talking about alcohol, but, and if you want to talk about Molly, we can talk more about Molly, Ethan. but from a medical perspective, what we know is that the brain does develop until you're about 25 years old. And so anytime you introduce some sort of toxin, and especially one that's addictive and has addictive potential, the earlier you start and the heavier your use, the more likely that you will have trouble with addiction or struggle with that substance later on in life. But, you know, as far as experimenting, it's super common. So I thought that aspect of the movie was very similar. Never had any personal experience with Molly. I'm sorry, Ethan.
No need to apologize, by the way.
I'll just say, I'll leave it to the medical professionals on all of that. But I think for me in this movie, when it comes to like the alcohol and the drugs, I think it's a lot more to do with just like conversations around like peer pressure and like their place in the school, because obviously it happens everywhere. I didn't feel, and I think the storyline made it to where it wasn't, you know, these kids weren't just like waking up every morning, like, you know, fiending for a sip of beer. It was much more to impress their friends and impress the people around them. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Lucas played a good character because Lucas didn't really buy into a lot of the peer pressure or of the things. I loved Lucas.
But
I think
best character
for this, it really creates a good conversation for parents to have. I mean, the whether or not all the other stuff aside, but just like talking with kids about peer pressure, right? And like obviously we know like the VHS straight to camera, like do not do drugs, video, that we know that, right? But it doesn't really work if you're just talking at kids and not talking with them. So I think just actually addressing why they're wanting to impress their friends and like what kind of validation they're looking for in their friends, that they just might need to have a conversation that, you know, you're not always going to get validated like that from friends. And some people around you might get you to do things that you don't want to do, and you don't have to do that. And I think that just comes down to speaking with kids at a much earlier age about bodily autonomy, about consent. And these are all age appropriate, right? Like we don't talk to fourth graders about algebra. We start kids with different building blocks, and then they can go to calculus or they can go to different levels. But with sex ed, we basically are just like, okay, here's one health class, here's a pregnancy video, and now just go out. Whereas we can start talking about consent in first grade by saying, you know, you need to ask permission before borrowing your friend's pen, or no one can just come up and hug you. They need to ask you for permission, and teaching consent other ways and through age appropriate ways like that is what I would offer.
Wow.
And I loved the theme of consent too throughout the whole
thing. Yes, it was interesting. It was very interesting.
What's the first step of practicing to kiss? You lean in. No, you ask for consent.
Yeah,
great. I loved it. I mean, I'm not that old, but it was certainly not taught to us the importance of consent.
Correct.
And I'm just so intrigued as to what kids are getting nowadays, and if that type of reaction is standard.
Yeah, there's a lot of states who are mandating that consent is included in sex education curriculum, like California, Massachusetts, Maryland. A lot of states are incorporating consent in an early age. I appreciate it. I love the references. At times, it did feel like a little on the nose, just because, you know, at one minute you have this very articulate where Max, like, you have to ask for consent when it comes to this mannequin that they think is a mannequin. But then 5 minutes later, they try to use a drone to spy on other people kissing without their consent. So it's really just kind of like, when we think of consent, we usually just think about it in terms of affirmative sexual consent. When I think, hopefully, I think one of the things, if anything, comes out of what we're going through right now with social distancing is just like that physical boundary and like how it is important to ask someone before you give them a hug or shake their hand. And I hope that with consent conversations, it just doesn't stay to like, okay, affirmative consent and that's it. Because it was just really jarring for me. Obviously, I'm not kind of the lay audience on this movie, but it was jarring for all of those like great, great moments in terms of affirmative consent. And then just to go with like, okay, but now we're just going to use a drone to spy on these two girls next to us without asking them, and just, you know, like invading their privacy without the consent, without kind of acknowledging it at all.
That's a great point. That's a great point.
And incredibly dangerous. Drones scare me in general.
Drones scare me. Also, kids scare me. So...
I'm not sure if the companies you're working for, Lincoln, would appreciate you saying that you're scared of kids. all those drone parts did freak me out. But I did love how they just weaved consent into so many aspects of this movie. I thought that was great. So I wanted to also talk about like puppy love and just crushes we get during puberty, because that's kind of another common theme here in the film. And it feels like the most real thing in the world when you're in it, right? And then, you know, an adult will tell you like, oh, well, it's just puppy love. And so I just kind of wanted your guys's take on it. Like, is that addressed now to kids? Because nobody talked about that when I was younger.
Yeah, you know, that was a very comical part of the end of the movie as well, is this whole time Max is obsessing about this one particular girl. And then a month later, he's dating the friend of the girl. And then a month later, spoiler alert, the relationship doesn't last. So again, I'm not sure what's addressed in schools, but as far as, you know, part of what I've been doing recently is a lot of social media outreach and answering questions, just general health questions from teenagers. And it kind of circles back to that normal question of, am I normal for starting to have these sexual feelings for someone else, or, you know, attraction to someone else? You know, so as far as belittling it or, you know, calling it puppy love. I don't think that's necessarily productive, but just, you know, more saying, hey, this is fine. You know, it's okay to feel these things and to, you know, take this journey. I get a lot of questions also about how do I know if I'm bisexual or gay or straight, and or if I don't have any sexual attraction at all, is that okay? And again, what I keep telling kids is just, you know, live in the moment, you know, feel the process out. And there's no rush to define anything in your teen years, in your adult life. And it can change with time. And so I do think it's again, circling back sort of to that masturbation talk and just respecting the mental changes that a child, teen, tween is going through, and, you know, saying it's okay to have a crush. It's okay. And not belittling it and not calling it puppy love, but I thought the end was very funny. And often the truth is that relationships at that point in a tween's life are generally brief and transient, but you learn from every relationship.
Exactly. So. I think obviously like kids look up to adults and just think that like we have everything figured out. And I think a lot of parents refrain from speaking to their kids because they're scared that they're going to get something wrong or that they don't know something. And I think just being honest with kids and just terms of like, you know, we're all figuring things out all the time. We're always learning. I have nothing figured out. And being honest to say like, you know what? I don't know all the forms of contraception actually, but let's look it up together. And just really being honest about what you know versus what you don't know is really helpful. And like Dr. T said, like as a kid, like those crushes are like your end all be all. Like that is a hill that you will die on.
Yeah.
And like no one is going to convince you otherwise. And I think people just need to understand that. You can, of course, help them with context and help them not maybe kind of disasterize everything. But at the end of the day, you really do have to let them process their emotions and just let them know that all feelings are meant to be felt, and that's okay too. I think one big thing for me is that when it comes to rejection, right? I think in schools we have sex education curriculum that talks about crushes and like relationships and how to develop relationships. But I think we can be doing a lot more to like make sure young people are aware that rejection is normal and that people of all ages deal with rejection, and just really helping them figure out healthy ways to deal with it. Because the problem would be if Max had this crush, and this crush, fortunately in the movie, the crush liked him back, which is, you know, all good. But if the crush didn't like him back, I think Max could be set, because Max is so determined in this movie to get to the crush, could be kind of defensive, very focused on like what he deserves and not necessarily accepting that rejection. And I think rejection also plays in with this movie when it comes to Thor's singing career, shall I say, in just terms of people not accepting that. I
was very successful.
Exactly. I think a lot of young people would do great if they had more kind of conversation, education around how to deal with rejections if their crush does not like them. And, you know, letting them know all crushes will not like you back, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that totally speaks to how parents can speak with their child instead of at their child. I feel like that's totally the tendency to just say like, you don't feel this way, or you will not feel this way.
Yes. One other thing is that when I was growing up, this is literally the biggest pet peeve, and hopefully my mom does not listen. My mom I would always be like, I'm cold, I'm hot. And she'd be like, no, you're not. It's like 72 degrees, you know, it would,
right.
I'm like, I'm cold. I am cold. And you telling me I am not cold does not make me not cold. So that's the same strategy when it comes to a crush, like you saying that this is a silly crush, like that doesn't change anything for me.
And I would just say one other thing too about, I absolutely, in a perfect world, parents would be, or guardians would be willing to discuss these things and open to sharing their own experiences. But a lot of parents just really aren't. And so at least making sure your child has some person that they can talk to, that you have confidence that they will give wholesome, you know, accurate information. Even you don't as a parent necessarily have to be okay talking about masturbation, but you should know that your kid is going to have these questions, and to at least be prepared to, you know, send them to your aunt or uncle or a teacher or Lincoln, you know, yes, someone that they can talk to, or a doctor if they're not too scared to talk to a doctor about it, but making sure that there's a reliable adult at least somewhere in your life.
Yeah.
If you're not comfortable.
Exactly. That's a great point, Dr. T. I also, you know, parents also didn't get the sex ed either, you know? So it's like they probably got dismal ideas around sex and their bodies and relationships. And really our whole society teaches us not to talk about this. So I totally understand there are a lot of parents who feel very anxious about this field and very anxious about asking these questions. But just as Dr. T said, there's so many resources out there that you can use to start the conversations with your kid, whether it's maybe they're asking you a question about menstruation or something else, and maybe it's you not telling them everything, but you going to find an amazing video or something else, watching that video yourself, figuring out if you want to show it to your kid, sending it to your kid, and then just asking, what do you think? What did you think about that? What did you like? Having these conversation starters so that it's not all on you to just sit down and have this very pressurized talk. Mm-hmm. It's also not just one talk. It's a lot of talks early and often. I think we put all this pressure on having the one birds and bees talk. But what we know from sexual health development and what we see in terms of rates of teen pregnancy and STI, like, it's not one talk. It's a lot of little smaller talks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I'm, you know, just too busy to do, unfortunately. So here's what my plan is. I'm going to... If I have a kid, I'm just going to watch some basketball and put them on a Zoom call with you guys, the two of you, maybe three, four times a week to make sure you guys cover everything. Ooh. They can wear headphones and it's all good.
Cool.
Perfect. And we'll send them like tambourines and like musician instruments just to make sure they have, you know, some exciting things to do around you.
Great. Yeah.
That sounds awesome. A drum set. Would love to get them a drum set. Ethan.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. I mean, I'm a musician, so I can jam along with them or put them in some sort of silent room until they're good enough. Okay, no, so I have a few puberty myths. I looked up some of the top puberty myths for us to weigh in on. And just for clarity, I know the answers to these, people. I can tell you're going to make fun. Do not. And by the way, even if I didn't, that's okay too. My parents didn't go through proper training.
It's okay, Ethan. This is your safe space. It's okay.
Oh, that's so sweet. Lincoln. No, I will make fun of you. Yeah.
It goes against everything you've been saying.
I know it. I know, but you're grown. So.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's no excuse anymore. Okay, so the top one, which I didn't see coming, one of the top myths, it said, if a female has her period, she cannot swim, run, etc.
Well, that's totally false.
That is totally false. Yeah, she can do anything she normally does, use tampons and menstrual cups for swimming. It says that exercise can actually help reduce cramps and improve mood.
Yeah, she can do, a period shouldn't stop you. Yeah, you can swim. A lot of times we don't have to talk about the specifics, but the flow will slow once you're in the water. At least it'll be retained in your body and then it'll come out later. You can run and exercise, and that's actually great for cramps too. So
great. Okay. Well, speaking on the normal, this one says it is not normal for boys to release semen in their sleep.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
It says it is not normal for boys to release semen in their sleep.
I think we know where we're going with this question.
God,
but maybe
damn
I'll
it.
Just confirm before.
Like wet dreams?
Yes, exactly. Like wet dreams are not natural. That's what they're saying, or not normal.
You want to take this one, Lincoln? No, totally real.
Totally normal. And it happens, you know? It can be alarming when it happens for the first time, but it's something that's normal. And nothing to be afraid of. You're not broken. It's just your body responding, and it's very, very normal.
Yeah.
I'm going to add a little spice here. So wet dreams don't necessarily have, you don't have to have like a sexy dream or anything. Sometimes they're not really sure why they happen necessarily, maybe a little friction or rub while you're sleeping with the sheets. But semen production is actually a part of puberty as well. And so the wet part of a wet dream it usually happens a little bit later in puberty. So the production of the fluid that goes with sperm happens a little bit later, like around the growth spurt time. Just FYI.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, of course. It's not just boys either, you know?
That is true.
Correct. Like, so wet dreams, whether you call them wet dreams, nocturnal emissions, discharge, it's normal if you do, but also normal if you don't. It's just, you know, another one of great life's mysteries.
Okay, I got two more quick ones. The size of a male penis is related to the size of his hands or feet.
False.
Yeah, both shaking your heads like, no.
No.
Correct. That is false. Yeah, it has nothing to do with it. Okay.
All different shapes, all different sizes, nothing to do with anything.
I could talk about all sorts of things that happen to
penises,
but not related to size and feet.
Got it. Okay. And then with acne, you know, a lot of kids worry about that. I know I had a spell with it as well. They said a myth was eating junk food or chocolate causes acne.
So that is really more person specific. You know, a person can have like a flare or something that triggers their acne to flare up, but there is not a definitive, this food causes your acne to flare up or get worse. It's personal. Everyone's different. Yeah.
Yeah. I just say, listen to your body, you know, listen to your body. If you think you need to change your diet, test, just listen to your body. It's, you know, our bodies are fickle things and we just need to listen and then go from there.
Can I say one more, Ethan?
Always.
Okay. So this is one of my notes. So at one point, I think, is cussing okay?
Please.
Okay. So at one point, I think it's Thor that gets called bitch tits.
That sounds about
right. Creative insult.
It was either Thor or Lucas. I can't remember. I just wrote bitch tits on my notes. But it is also super common. About a third of teenage boys develop small breasts.
Hmm. Okay. So that's also normal.
Yes. Also normal. I could have quizzed you on it, actually. I have one. Does the tampon go in the butt? Ethan?
There was a trend on TikTok where people were like, I don't know where it goes. Did you see it?
Yes. I did. I still have so many people asking about that.
Wow.
The trend of females claiming that I guess everybody says that periods are when a person with a vagina cuts off a penis, and that's what a period is. And that's not it, but it's Jesus. Not true at all. But
thank
a
God.
Lot of people, I think. Is it true, Ethan? No.
I really hope not.
No, it's false.
Okay, great. Good to know. I would just add in that just don't eat junk food or too much chocolate in general, because it's not great for you.
That's true. But
so there's that.
It's okay to reward yourself every once in a while.
Hey, yeah, come on. You got a quick metabolism. You're a kid. You're at the movies. You want some Bunch of Crunch. I get it. That's awesome.
Yeah, it changes when you're older. Yes.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? Jesus Christ. Okay, great. So I know we're running short on time, but I wanted to give you guys a chance to let people know about anything that you've got going on. I know we've talked about a few of it, a few things, but if you wanted to mention something else, now is the time. Where can people find you? What are you excited about?
Yeah, so I've just for the past few months been working on this social media platform, Ask Dr. T, and I am on TikTok and have no pride. So I just do all sorts of random videos on puberty and sex health and questions that teens have asked me. I answer them. And then also on Instagram, and I'm working on a YouTube channel. And like you mentioned, also working with a podcast that's totally normal. I have to practice saying it more. That's totally normal. But it's been a wonderful few months because of the interest. You know, like all this stuff we've been discussing, so many people are uncomfortable addressing it or don't know where to turn to get accurate health information, especially when it comes to sort of taboo subjects. And so I'm trying to provide medically accurate, honest answers for teens and, you know, parents, if they want to learn too, that's fantastic. I encourage it. And Ethan, if you want to learn and prepare for your future children too, that's great too.
Yeah, absolutely. I will be keeping tabs to keep myself informed so that I can
Perfect.
Have periodic talks. Lincoln?
Yeah, so if people are interested, you can visit amaze.org. We have over 160 animated videos covering everything from menstruation to masturbation to trans puberty to all the contraceptive access options. And we have a feature for parents called the Askable Parent. newsletter where it's a six day challenge where you get free resources like coloring books that teaches the correct names of body parts to children, and other resources as you kind of transition to more time at home with your kids. And everything is free, will always be free. And we have a lot of different resources for parents, educators, and young people on amaze.org.
Fantastic. Amaze.org. I love it. Both of you are angels for joining me today on this program and informing. Oh, I wish you guys could see Lincoln. We got to take a screenshot of that or something. Seriously, thank you for joining me. This has been so fun. And I hope the future of our youth is more informed and more comfortable and confident getting into their adolescence.
Well, that's the goal.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This has been great.
Yeah, it was so good to chat with you, Dr. T.
And you as well, Lincoln.
Bye.
Bye. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bad Science is a Seeker podcast produced by Emily Feld and me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our editor is Lucas Bollinger, and our social media is managed by Blue Whale Media. Shout out to EJ and Kate. And the executive producer is Brett Kushner. Oh, follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Pod. If there's a movie you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, feel free to email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. And please leave us an iTunes review. Give us 5 stars. I sound like an Uber driver, but it does help. It makes sure people know about the podcast, which we really appreciate. Thanks for listening. Bye.